In a highly breakable, often shakable world, it's good to know that some things never change.
When we are pressured to conform, when our beliefs are belittled, it's good to know that some things never change.
When we are asked to do the impossible and we fail, it's good to know some things never change.
When we feel all alone and we wonder if we should take a public stand, it's good to know some things never change.
When God tests us with success and we are tempted to take the credit for ourselves and nurture our pride, it's good to know that some things never change.
When everything around us seems uncertain and out of control, it's good to know that some things never change.
When events shake us to our core, when right seems wrong, and when wrong seems right, it's good to know that some things never change.
When pain and suffering put our faith to the test,
and the foundations we build upon seem like leaves in the wind,
it's good to know that there's a rock, there's a refuge, there's a promise, there's a goal. There's a Jesus who never changes.
When shaking times come,
it's good to know
that some things are unshakable.
Hey, welcome to Calvary. Wherever you find yourself, however you found us, you are so welcome. This last week, we had the opportunity here at Calvary Harvest Fields to partner with Terry and Robin Walling to do some leadership development stuff, some coaching skills training. And Terry is from Chico, California. He considers himself part of the Calvary family. So for all those of you who connect outside of our local area, he's one of you. I just want to say he gave me a coffee cup, and I need to make sure that you see this coffee cup, a Chico state of mind. And I promise you, anybody who gets me a coffee cup, sooner or later, it will end up here. So this weekend, we are jumping into Hebrews chapter 12. We are on this series called Unshakable, and we started last weekend. So if you didn't catch that one, it would be great to catch it. This week, we are jumping into really just the first few verses of Hebrews 12. Ben Coleman never won a race. He ran many races, but he never won. In fact, in every race he ever entered, he never finished better than dead last. In his 4 years at Hannah High, Ben was the slowest, literally the slowest cross-country runner in America. And I know what you're thinking, that's only because Pastor Dan wasn't running, and you're probably right. But in 4 years, Ben's all-time best for that 3.1 miles was a bit under 40 minutes. A few weeks ago, I had the chance to see my daughter, Katie, run her very first marathon. The same morning, my daughter-in-law, Kelly, ran a 10-mile race, and they both would have demolished Ben. But Ben had cerebral palsy. Physical therapy was his life. The effects of cerebral palsy, if you don't know about it, they include unusually weak and tight muscles, problems with balance, poor coordination, and developmental delays, especially with walking and running. As Rick Riley wrote in a Sports Illustrated article, imagine what it feels like for Ben to watch his perfectly healthy twin Alex or his younger brother Chris run like rabbits for Hannah High, while Ben runs like a guy whacking through an Amazon thicket. Imagine never beating anybody the finish line, dragging along that stubborn left side, pulling that unbending tire iron of a leg around to the front. And worse, he lifts his feet so little that he trips on anything, a Twinkie-sized rock, a licorice-thick branch, and he won't let anybody help him up, though he falls hard. His brain can't send signals fast enough for his arms to cushion his fall. Sometimes, Riley wrote, his mom just can't watch. I mean, can you imagine being part of Ben's family, one of his friends? We don't like watching those we love suffer and struggle and fall, but every time Ben fell, picked himself up, and every time he finished, he had a crowd of runners who finished long ago running beside him. Rick Riley writes, one day Ben was coming in with his huge army. Ben's friends, his face stoplight red and tortured, that laborious gait eating up the race inch by inch when he fell, less than 10 yards from the line. And this gasp went up from the crowd, but Ben went through the 15-second process of getting his bloody knees under him, his balance back, and his forward motion going again. And he finished. And when he finished, from the roar, you would have thought he had just won the Boston Marathon. Words can't describe that moment, says his mom. I saw grown men just stand there and cry. Ben could get to you that way. A kid who builds wheelchair ramps for Easter seals and spends nights helping at an assisted living home, helps at Habitat for Humanity, devotes hours to holding the hand of a disabled neighbor, Miss Jessie, and plans to run a marathon one day and become a doctor. I was thinking of the words that we might use to describe someone like Ben Coleman, and I doubt we would get far in our description without using the word heart. What a heart. He's got the heart of a champion. He just never lose heart. An uncommon heart, a heart that just won't quit. I mean, why did people come from all over the state to watch the slowest high school cross-country runner in America? Why were they compelled to cheer for this kid who falls flat on his face almost every race? Why would his teammates finish their race and then go back out to run the last 10 minutes of every race with a kid they could beat running backwards? Why does everyone cry and celebrate and hug him like he just won the Boston Marathon every time he finishes a race? Why? Because Ben never quits. He falls, but he never quits. He won't win, but he won't quit. And in a world where everything that can be shaken is shaking, sometimes the best word, the best challenge, the best encouragement is simply don't stop. But please hear me. This is for you. Don't give up. Don't lose heart. Don't quit. His mom says his falls have not broken his spirit. Kid sister Megan says, he teaches me how to persevere and not give up on myself. And Ben says this, I think God has put me here for a reason. I think I've been given a gift so that I can set an example for other people. I'd like to show people that you can either stop trying or you can pick yourself up and keep going. Now, if there are just two words that I hope stick in your soul today, it's the words don't quit. Don't give up and don't give in. Don't stop. You may be on the verge of your greatest finish. I know you fell hard, but you may be a chapter away from a celebration with a crowd of friends. You might just be one step away from an experience that could develop your heart into the heart of a hero, the heart of a champion. Don't quit. Because it's not just a race. This is life. It's not just a race. It's not winner take all. It's your life. So with that in mind, listen to these words in Hebrews chapter 12, verse 1. Here's what the author of Hebrews writes. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a huge crowd of witnesses to the life of faith, let us strip off every weight that slows us down, especially the sin that so easily trips us up, and let us run with endurance the race that God has set before us. Now, Hebrews 12:1 starts with the word therefore, and a good interpretation principle is anytime you see the word therefore, you should ask what it's there for. In this case, it's building on chapter 11. Because of what we read in chapter 11, therefore. Now, some call Hebrews chapter 11 the Faith Hall of Fame. And it contains this incredible list of by faith stories. The stories are not told in depth in Hebrews 11 because it was kind of assumed that everybody knew the stories. And in a gathering, all you'd have to do is say, hey, remember Sarah's story? And don't forget the burning bush of Moses. And oh my goodness, Esther, I am so inspired by her story, inspired to be courageous and self-sacrificial. And what about David? Oh my, the shepherder turned giant slayer. Remember his story? And the people then, just like today, we're drawn to stories. We're drawn to their stories. I love what John Eldridge writes. He says, we were born into the midst of a great story begun before the dawn of time. A story of adventure, risk and loss, heroism and betrayal. A story where good battles evil and danger lurks around every corner and glorious deeds wait to be done. Think of all those stories, he writes, that you've ever loved. There's a reason they stirred your heart. There's a larger story. And you have a role to play. Now, I got to be honest. For as long as I can remember, I've wanted to be part of the larger story, of a larger story, one that matters, a story of adventure involving risk that requires faith. And those are the stories of Hebrews 11. You can go back and read it later today. Every story that matters begins with the words by faith, by faith, by faith. Time and again in Hebrews 11, we read those words by faith. By faith, Noah prepared an ark and saved his family. By faith, Sarah had a child when she was an old lady. By faith, Moses passed through the Red Sea as on dry ground. By faith, Joshua marched around Jericho and the walls came a-tumbling down. By faith, unnamed others were willing to be tortured and imprisoned rather than reject God. Unnamed others suffered great difficulty and disappointment, but they found the power to believe, to endure, to persevere. And all of these, it says, obtained a good story through faith, by faith. They ran a good race. They lived a good life, sometimes a hard life, but a good life by faith. I mean, think about that. Even unnamed others. Hebrews 11 contains a hall of fame for the no-name faithful. And do you know why they were unnamed? Because we don't know the whole story. We don't know the whole story. We only see a portion. Now, over the years, I've had the privilege, the honor, the joy of discovering some pretty amazing by-faith stories here at Calvary. Like there was a woman here whose grandparents were missionaries to Egypt. They were responsible for starting an underground seminary and dozens of churches. Do you know that we have in our midst at Calvary people whose story involves God delivering them from brokenness, from addictions to alcohol and drugs and pornography? And in one story that I know of, there's a young man who grew up at Calvary and listened to God's call to go study Chinese in Beijing in order to serve pastors in underground seminaries. Good friends of ours who are part of Calvary once led a church in downtown New York City that served so many people in the margins of life. And when I think of the stories at Calvary, I think of so many people who have opened their hearts to kids from around the world. We have so many who have adopted and fostered and sponsored. And you know what? Because of them, new stories are being written. What is your by faith story? Last week when Terry Walling was here, about 40 people who want to finish well spent almost 10 hours sharing parts of their story with each other. And as I listened to some of those stories, I thought, wow, it's pretty amazing. All these unique stories being lived out by faith, the races set before them being run. Well, what does the writer of Hebrews say? There's a race that God himself has set before us. And my race is different from your race. It's unique to me, set out for us by God himself. I have my race, you have yours, and in fact, it's not just a race. It's your story. It's your by faith story. It's a story that only happens by faith because you can't see it all. You can't plan for it. Sometimes God calls us to go to a place that we don't even know where it is. We can't control it. We want to, but we can't. Sometimes you can't even choose it. It's set before us by God. It's our by faith in God story. You know, sometimes we look at chapters in our lives and we begin to think that's all there is. Did you ever hear someone say, that's the story of my life? I mean, usually we hear that or we say it after a failure or when something doesn't go well or right. It's said in the midst of the hard chapters, stuff we don't like. Sometimes even with a bit of despair, that's the story of my life. But you know what? Even about your life, you don't know the whole story, not even your own. In the hard parts, we run by faith, faith in God, faith in God's goodness, faith that the best is yet to come. It's not just a race. It's a by faith story being written by God. And I don't know if you like this or not, but it's being read by others. In other words, as you run your race, as you live your life, people are watching. People are watching you run this life of faith. Just like others watch the by faith stories of Hebrews 11. People are watching. That's one reason why we prioritize our front yard mission on CWOW Sunday, Church Without Walls Sunday, so that people can watch your race. Because you've heard this before, but you may be the only Jesus some people ever see. Your front yard might be the closest your neighbor ever gets to church, and that's our race. A month or so ago, a woman came to me, somewhat new to Calvary. And she said, please, whatever you do, don't stop doing CWOW Sunday. Don't stop putting a priority on our front yard mission. She said, I have a family that will never step foot in a church. And I think this is the only way they'll ever meet Jesus. See, someone is reading your story. Someone is watching your race of faith. Somebody is trying to figure out who Jesus is by watching how you live, by how you go through the hard times, what you do when you fall. We're surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, it says. I chatted with a young couple a while back, not really interested in church. And you know why? They consider themselves spiritual. They believe in Jesus, but they said they just couldn't find a church where the people look like Jesus. But they're watching. They're looking around for someone whose story puts their eyes on Jesus. So the writer of Hebrews says, so let's get rid of everything that slows us down or tangles us up. Let's get rid of sin, but not just a sin. Let's put into place anything that will help us run with endurance the race set before us. You know, some of us read these words in Hebrews 12 about running our race and living our lives and offering our story to all these people. We think, man, get out of here. You mean people are going to be watching me? What if I fall? What if I mess up? I got kind of a cool email this last week. Said, good evening, Pastor Noel. This is actually a Facebook message. Good evening, Pastor Noel. Your family sold me a used Samsung S9 cell phone a number of years ago. Lynn and I thought it through. It's probably like 4 or 5 years ago. 4 or 5 years ago, we sold one of our kids' phones. And this person wrote, we had quite the transaction, meeting at my office, not being able to unlock the phone, meeting at Verizon, refunding my money, and then meeting again later at Otto's after the phone was unlocked to complete the sale. She said, you all were the kindest, most honest, most reasonable sellers I've ever interacted with in real life and online. Working with you and Lynn was wonderful. This phone has been a gift to me, but the battery is no longer able to hold a charge, which is 100% to be expected, she wrote. It's an old phone. She said, do you or your children have any phones currently for sale? I had such a delightful interaction with you the first time. I'd really like to repeat it if you have a current listing. Thanks for your time. Hope you all are well. God bless. Man, people are watching. And little things and big things. About 20 years ago, I did a memorial service for a lady from what was then called Hilltop Mobile Home Park. Those of you who live in the area, you know it, and you know that it's no longer there, but this woman's name was Marjorie, and our intersection with her life began with a conviction that we at Calvary, we could do a better job of loving our neighbors. That this conviction has been with us for a long time. We've had this passion for a long time, and so we started casting a vision to buy a mobile home at Hilltop, and they give someone the opportunity to move in and do life with those in the neighborhood. Live there and love your neighbors. Be Jesus in that little community. Let that be part of your race, your by faith story. And so we started raising the money, and honestly, it was going kind of slow, and I wondered if we would ever get there, if it would ever happen. But one day I got a call from a couple at Calvary. They'd received a bit of a financial windfall. Man, it would have been so easy to see it as an opportunity to shore up their retirement fund, but they decided to run the race of faith. So they wrote out a check for $20,000. And it just so happened that someone else from Calvary was selling their mobile home in Hilltop. They called and said that they'd sell it for far less than it was worth in order to be a part of this faith story. And so we began what we called Hilltop Blessings. People lived in the home on a mission to do good. Relationships were built and slowly trust was gained, just running the race set before us. And then one day, Noah came out of the trailer to find that a woman had fallen. It was Marge. And while Marge was in the hospital, it was discovered that her home was in great disarray. In fact, it wasn't a home that any of us would probably care to live in. And so Jesus' apprentices at Calvary rose to the occasion and began to transform her home, cleaning it and fixing it and rebuilding it. I mean, hundreds and hundreds of hours were put into this task by faith. I wish you could have been at her memorial service. We sat just in a group, a circle of people from that community. Nothing formal, nothing official. She was the last of her family. And I sat there just listening to people, listening to neighbors of Marge, and they were sharing how this experience, how that experience had changed them. See, they were watching, and I got tears in my eyes as I thought, this matters. Being the church in this neighborhood matters. Before Marge died, she found Jesus, and a community of neighbors were given living proof of a loving God. How? Simple. Someone took seriously the race set before them. A bunch of Jesus apprentices took seriously the mission to love God and love your neighbor. So don't quit. I said again, don't quit. Even if you already made a mess in your family, in your life, at your workplace, in your neighborhood, don't quit. Even if your neighbor is mean and so broken that you feel overwhelmed and the race seems so long, don't quit. Get rid of everything that keeps you from being the hands and heart of Jesus and don't quit. Don't quit. When it seems like everything that can be shaken is being shaken, people need to see someone living by faith in an unshakable God. In shaking times, they desperately need to know that there are some unchangeable realities. Let me read Hebrews 12:1 again. Here's what it says. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a huge crowd of witnesses to the life of faith, let us strip off every weight that slows us down, especially the sin that so easily trips us up. And let us run with endurance the race that God has set before us. And I know it's not always easy. I mean, the writer of Hebrews knew that it's not always easy. Jesus knows that it's not always easy. And I think of watching my daughter, Katie, run her first marathon. We made it to 5 different checkpoints, drive there, park the car, at least it felt like a mile away because everyone is going to the same checkpoint, get the stroller out, pack the kids up, run, okay, walk quickly to the next checkpoint, line up and wait for Katie to run by. But I'm telling you, every time she ran by, she made it look easy. Like there's a big smile on her face, running over to kiss all the kids. But that night she could hardly move, and the next day she hurt all over, and a few days later she lost a toenail. It wasn't easy. This race of life, the by faith story, is not always easy. In fact, it's often not easy. But let me just give you a few unchangeable realities in the midst of the difficulty of the race. And let me start with this one. You're not the first to run the race. You're not. What you're going through, others have gone through. Whatever it is. So learn from them. In fact, choose a biblical mentor, a historical mentor. A mentor does not have to be living to learn from their life. Or choose someone that you rub shoulders with now. It's not just about those who are watching you. Who are you watching? Who are you watching? Who are you learning from? Who, just by the way they live their life, who is encouraging you? You're not the first to fall or the first to give up. You're not the first to run into a stretch of the story that feels like it's never going to end. You're not the first. We can learn from those who have gone before us. Here's a second unchangeable reality. Your best life will be found when you engage in the race. Your best life, the life that thrives will be found when you engage in the race. Not fans in the stands, but players on the field. I know sometimes we think that giving up will lead to a better life. It won't. Sometimes we wonder if maybe the church is putting too much emphasis on the mission when we should be taking better care of the flock. But there's this fascinating, counterintuitive reality that when we try to hang on to our life, this is what Jesus said, when we try to hang on to our life, we lose it. But when we give it away, we gain it back. That's the race. The by faith story that we're called to live out, your best life will be found when you engage in the race. So again, don't quit. Don't give up. Don't give in. Don't stop. Don't quit. Here's the last unchangeable reality. With it, we finally get to verse 2, out of verse 1 into verse 2. It says, we do this by keeping our eyes on Jesus, the champion who initiates and perfects our faith. Because of the joy awaiting him, he endured the cross, disregarding its shame, and now he is seated in the place of honor beside God's throne. We hit this last week. Remember Hebrews 13:8. Jesus is the same yesterday, today, and forever. Jesus is the unchangeable treasure, the unshakable king of an unshakable kingdom. It's no wonder we're called to keep our eyes on Jesus, to fix our gaze on Jesus. But here's the heart of this unchangeable reality. This is the why of the race. If you keep your eyes on Jesus, sooner or later, you won't be able to take your eyes off of Jesus. See, when I think about races and great adventures, I think of passion and devotion and surrender. You know, every once in a while, I'm guessing this has probably happened to you, But every once in a while, you cross paths with a Jesus apprentice who is all in, devoted to Jesus. They are surrendered, willing to lay everything down and give everything up. And their surrender, it appears to be curiously hopeful and certainly joyful, not forced. They've seen something in Jesus that makes them want to follow him. They're fully devoted. They just can't get their eyes off Jesus. But there's a difference, right? There's a difference between being told to keep your eyes on Jesus and feeling like, I just can't take my eyes off of Jesus. I'll get rid of anything that keeps me from running to Jesus. And it's a matter of the heart, right? See, if self-discipline and grit is the driving force in my pursuit of Jesus, eventually I'll quit pursuing Jesus. But if my heart's passion is to know Christ, then I'll never quit. Like Paul, pretty soon everything else seems like garbage compared to the treasure of knowing Christ. The goal and the finish line of this race that we're called to run is developing an unrestrained passion for Jesus. I want my story, I want my life to be characterized by an unrestrained passion for the Son of God. If you keep your eyes on Jesus, sooner or later, you won't be able to take your eyes off of Jesus. Jesus is the prize of everyone who runs the race, the treasure we pursue, the finish line of faith. So when the shaking comes, you know what I'm going to say? Don't quit. Jesus is waiting. Joy is coming. The best is yet to come. Let me read those words again, verses 1 and 2, and this time I'll add in verses 3 and 4. Here's what it says, and let us run with endurance the race God has set before us. We do this by keeping our eyes on Jesus, the champion who initiates and perfects our faith. Because of the joy awaiting him, he endured the cross, disregarding its shame, and now he is seated in the place of honor beside God's throne. Think of all the hostility he endured from sinful people. Then you won't become weary and give up. After all, you have not yet given your lives in your struggle against sin. Now, those last two sentences are curiously hard and yet wondrously hopeful. Don't quit. Keep your eyes on Jesus. When you get weary and you start to lose hope and you're thinking about giving up, think of all the hostility that Jesus endured. After all, you have not yet given your lives in the struggle against sin. Now, when I first read those words, after all, you have not yet given your lives in the struggle against sin. Some translations say, you have not yet shed blood. When I read those words, I can't help but think of things I've probably said to my kids. Like, it's a long ways from your heart. Quit crying, right? You're okay. I don't see any blood. Suck it up. It could be worse. Like, it doesn't matter how much it hurts, get going. But I don't think that's what the author of Hebrews means here. I don't think that's what these words mean. I think it's more along the lines of, you're not dead yet, so it's not over. I don't care what's happened. If your life isn't over, your story isn't finished. It's never too late to finish well. So don't quit. Years ago, a few of us went out to a conference in California to a church called Mosaic. And Mosaic believes that God has called the church to be a creative community of believers. And so during the conference, they had pieces of art on display in their church. There was one piece by Beatrix de Foya. It was really quite beautiful. It was a sunrise. And from a distance, it looked like glass, broken pieces of glass coming together to form this mosaic, a beautiful picture of hope, the sun rising over the earth. And there was a pastor at the conference who was so moved by the picture that he got word to the pastor that he wanted to buy it. And so he was sent to Beatrix, but she wouldn't sell the picture. She would only give it away. He insisted on paying something for it, and so she told him to make a check out to the church as a gift. And so the next day, he brought the check to the pastor and a letter describing the story behind his desire to have that mosaic picture of a sunrise. He wrote, I don't know why I was initially drawn to the picture, but I ignored everything else as I made my way towards it. And as I got closer, I thought, broken bits of colored glass? No. Torn bits of colored paper, ripped and torn and then rearranged to form a whole new image, a whole new idea, vision formed from 100 torn and tattered pictures. He said, I stared as some seemingly unrelated pieces of my own thoughts came together to form a new thought. And then I had this aha moment, and I knew why I had been drawn to the picture. He said, our daughter Anne gave her heart to Jesus at a very early age, so open and so trusting. And this trust made her open to our church family, and one of our so-called church members molested her when she was 9. He said, we wouldn't know the truth for a decade. All we knew was that the trust and the openness we once saw in our daughter had died. Over the next few years, we saw her life torn apart into jagged, fragmented pieces, and we were powerless to stop the shattering of her life. We prayed and we worked and we struggled. We didn't give up, but finally we had to let her go. This was going to be a long journey. When Anne was 20, she told us the truth, he said. And at least now we knew how to pray for her. Since Anne's heart was broken, her decisions were broken also. She married a young man who was an alcoholic, and after 5 years of abuse, she filed for divorce. Her father wrote this. He said, Anne is an artist. Her paintings are pictures from her heart, abstract, broken jumbles of unrelated fragments. When I've asked about them, she replied, well, what do you expect? But now there's hope, he said. For the first time in 15 years, Anne is taking steps towards healing. I prayed with her last week, and I remember my exact words, this pastor said. My exact prayer was, God, would you take the broken pieces of her life and make them into a new person? 1 week from today, he said, Anne will sign the divorce papers. This will be a very low point in her life, but on that day, I'll give her the picture and tell her it's a reminder that God is taking the broken pieces of her life and making a whole new picture. And I'll ask her to hang it on her wall so that every time she sees it, she remembers. Listen, whether you are on the father's side of that story or on the Anne side of that story, this is the race. This is the journey, our by faith story. In fact, isn't this the heart of our front yard mission? The next weekend is Seawall Sunday. We're called to go out and love our neighbors, be the church in our neighborhood. And really the heart of our mission is that we are the broken, sent to help the broken, find the healing, restoration, and grace of Jesus. We are a mosaic of Christ. We're a people who can't take our eyes off of him, and we want others to see him like we do, because when everything else is shaken, he is unshakable. I want to close again this week with my unshakable prayer. And I just encourage you, as I pray, pray these words along with me. They'll be on the screen. Let's pray together. God, would you shake everything that can be shaken so that only what's unshakable remains? God, shake every little kingdom so that the whole world knows that only Christ is King. God, shake us till our neighborhoods are full of your glory, and shake me till people can only see Jesus in me. When the race is hard and I'm limping along, I'll keep my eyes on Jesus. When I feel like a broken failure, hindered by sin, keep my eyes on Jesus till I can't take my eyes off of Jesus. Father, I believe that joy is waiting and the best is yet to come. And Jesus, you are unshakable. And it's in your name we pray. Amen.